Blog Talk Radio.
Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Shank, and I am the host of the show. My guest this evening is Barb Harris, a longtime friend on the internet. We first met on Second Light Life on Pat O'Brien's Portable Empire Island, and that was way, way up in the sky. Tonight we will be discussing animal rights. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Barb Harris. Hello, dear Barb.
Hello, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. I don't think I've heard your voice before.
No, you probably haven't.
I never had the voice thing. I wasn't able to listen to people's voices on Second Life because I just didn't have that.
I never was either. It never worked right for me.
So, what is your experience? Did you used to run a shelter for animals?
I did. I ran a no-kill animal shelter in Whitehorse,
mm-hmm.
which was basically the only shelter actually in the Yukon.
Right.
And I did that for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been sort of noted for my tenure being 6 years at a job, which is sort of typical for administrative people. But after 3 years, the compassion burnout was just more than I could take.
mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I ran an animal shelter, and I had a really good relationship with the city of Whitehorse, who also had an impound, and between the two of our organizations, we managed to do a really good job, I think, of saving a lot of animals that otherwise would have been euthanized.
Did you have what kind of system did you have in place to track the animals that were lost or they were in your care, and then that you gave them this a home, say, just as an example, for them to take care of the animal. But you probably had quite a system in place to track the comings and goings of all these animals, from what I can gather. How did that work?
Well, a lot of it is empiric and sort of there's. kind of like a closed society, if you will, amongst people who volunteer and work at that particular shelter, and I assume it's the same at other shelters.
Yes.
We kept a pretty close eye on the animals that we adopted out,
mm-hmm.
And we had a fairly rigorous screening process for people who wanted to adopt animals from the shelter, and we had some pretty hard and fast rules about certain things, and for instance, neutering of
yes.
animals that you know, when they're adopted out, they're too young to have done that procedure. We sent them home with vouchers for the neutering, like they paid for the neutering up front,
mm-hmm.
and these vouchers would come back, and we'd track that. They'd come back from the vet once the neutering had been done, and we would track that. and I don't know, just a, you know, if anybody got a bad vibe from somewhere, there would be somebody to check up on it, you know, if we felt that we'd made a bad decision.
Yeah.
It didn't happen very often because the screening process, sorry, ahead of adopting out an animal usually weeded out people who would not be suitable adopters.
How big a town is Whitehorse?
Oh, Whitehorse itself at that time was about 21,000 people. The population of the Yukon was about 30,000. And I didn't mean to lie by saying that, that it was the only animal shelter. It was probably the only no-kill animal shelter.
There was
a shelter in Dawson City where some real problems arise with, like Dawson City is a tourist destination, and it attracts a lot of people in the summer who, here in Canada, people can, they can go on social assistance, and they're given an allowance for feeding pets that they have, and for some reason, I don't know why, but they all seem to kind of collect dogs. And then they'll go to a place like Dawson City, which is a very transient sort of place because they have summer tourism things and they have music festivals and so on. And these people appear there and then they disappear without their animals. And so quite often Dawson would have the problem of multiple dogs running loose and multiple dogs running loose who are hungry get aggressive, and so they had a real issue there. But, you know, in Whitehorse, we did run a no-kill shelter, and we were working for the Humane Society Yukon. So, in essence, our responsibility was the entire Yukon.
That's a big responsibility, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, some days you come to work and there's a dog just tied up outside the shelter waiting. And, you know, I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. We had surrender fees and pickup fees if somebody's animal ended up with us who really, you know, they weren't necessarily at fault, but they would have to pay for any kind of food and medical care that their animals received while they were in our shelter. We had a pet report that we did daily that was published in the papers of animals that had been turned in and so on.
Oh, that's very interesting. I was at my brother's house last October. He lives in Norfolk, Virginia, and they have a no-kill zone for animals, you know, and it's the home for PETA, which is an animal rights group that is very famous, and I think that's probably why they have the no-kill policy there in Norfolk. And I think another city that has no-kill philosophy for animals is San Francisco, which is a huge city. So my brother had lived in a sort of a compound where the people that lived next door to him, the house, they had a lot of animals in the house. The house caught on fire, and the humans left and didn't really do much to take the animals with them. And one of the cats started living under his porch at the time, and I think it was a mother and these three little kittens. So Norfolk came by, and they took all of the animals, and they, from what I understand, they have a very, very careful system of recording where these animals, where they take animals from, and where they give the animals. And they gave all these animals, and to a cattery of a woman who was able to take care of them, and she was doing well, except suddenly, maybe a year later, she fell ill. And the city of Norfolk came in, and she was no longer able to take care of all the cats. Well, they knew where every cat had come from, and they called my brother, and they said, this cat was under your porch, and then ended up with this woman who no longer can take care of the cat that was under your porch, and you want the cat back. And he definitely did. So then I suppose they know where that cat is, and if something would happen to the cat, they would take the cat back. It's just an amazing system. I just wonder, in this so-called terrible economy that we have, if something like that kind of system, is that something that costs a lot of money? Is it, I would suppose it's something that's easily placed on the computer. You know, it could be a computerized program. It wouldn't take very long to figure out where all these animals are, and it wouldn't really cost that much. You know, how they have these excuses for ending programs. They certainly are ending all the programs for children and social programs here in the United States, and I would I hope that programs like tending to animals would not be something that ends. You know what I mean? Just so
well,
sad.
You know, I was really, really interested when you emailed me and told me about that, because we don't have anything like that in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Tracking is easy. But I just want, before I forget, I have to mention this because you mentioned PETA.
Yes.
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. It's been all over the news here today that I've been watching, is that PETA now is advocating that truly ethical people will now be feeding their cats a vegan diet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, in case anybody's listening that sort of follows PETA and what they do, I just want to say that no veterinarian anywhere ever will tell you that that's a really good thing to do with cats, because cats are meat eaters. They're not omnivores. They're not anything but carnivores.
Yes.
And I was blown away by listening to that. Anyway.
That is pretty wild, really.
There's an enzyme, I think it is, mm-hmm. in meat that cats need to process food properly. And if they don't get it, they develop organ difficulties and failure, and they die.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's just cats. Like, dogs can be trained to eat just about anything because they're omnivores. As are we.
mm-hmm.
Anyway, that aside, we had a tracking process that we were just kind of getting into, actually, when I left the shelter in Whitehorse. And it's almost like a 311 system. We have them here in Canada. I don't know if you do there, but it's kind of aligned somewhat to the 911 system of
mm-hmm.
emergency response. 311 has to do with municipalities and issues that arise there. Like, you know, if you've got a water main has burst and you've got kind of water flooding your lawn and whatnot, you phone 311, tell them what the problem is, and they come and hopefully really fast and fix it. And so there was a system developed by it was in conjunction with the Calgary Humane Society in Calgary, a system similar to the 311 system, but it had to do with animals and like we would put input information into this database that was housed in Calgary. About every animal that came into our shelter,
mm-hmm.
all of the relevant data about where the animal came from, and where it went to, and you could flag people, you know, if there was somebody that you felt that should never, ever be allowed to adopt an animal anywhere, you could input that information. And then if that person came into any shelter in the system, then their name would come up with a red flag.
Oh, yes. That's very good.
Yeah. And I haven't had anything to do with the shelter really since I left, so I'm not sure where that went. I'm assuming it's still in place. I'm hoping it's still in place. But it was a really good way of tracking animals, especially animals that hadn't had microchips implanted previous, but part of the system was implanting microchips in every animal that came into the shelter. And then that was absorbed.
Do you think more and more people are inserting microchips into their animals?
I think they are now, yeah. It wasn't... Mm-hmm. It wasn't a really big thing when I first, 2001 is when I first started working at the May Bakker shelter. It wasn't a huge thing, but it started to gain momentum across Canada and I think probably previous to that in the States because it, you know, I mean, it's been proven to work.
Mm-hmm. Carol Wiggert and Joan Adams are in the chat room. That's kind of cool.
Ooh.
Hi, Joan. Hi, Carol. And Carol,
I can't see the chat room.
Are you logged into? You may not be logged in.
My internet has been really, really iffy today.
Yes. You said. Oh, my
and
gosh.
I tried to log in earlier, and I wasn't able to, but I think I can now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try it. But yeah, I've got stories of one cat in particular. His name was Kishka.
Mm-hmm.
And his owner came into the shelter just really kind of sobbing. She'd lost her cat. And she was visiting in Whitehorse. And, oh, here comes my interruption. I knew it would happen. I'm going to go to a quieter room.
Is it an animal?
No. My animals are all kind of quiet at this time of day. It's the guy who pays the bills here.
Uh-huh.
I left a note for him on the table telling him that if I'm not around, I'm busy doing something else. Anyway, Kishka. She was from Ottawa, and she was up canoeing on the Yukon River with her fiancé. And Kishka had gone missing, and I'm not sure what that whole story was, but she came in just every second day to see if he'd turned up. And she had a complete description of him, and she had a microchip in him, and she came back many, many times before, you know, finally they had to get back to their jobs and whatnot. And it was, this was in the summertime, and it was in the winter, I'm thinking it was maybe January.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually got a news clipping about that whole event. One of our foster families came in and said they had this cat that her husband had found at the hydro generator station.
Mm-hmm.
And she said he needs some surgery. He's got some really bad issues there on his leg, and they couldn't afford. They had just kind of taken him home, but they couldn't afford this surgery. So I said, okay, we'll we'll foot the bill for the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And they took him to the vet, and the vet phoned over and said, this is going to be kind of costly.
Yeah.
Said, okay. Let me know the damages. Let me know the what you can. And so they told me what the damage was, and they said it. They thought maybe he had been electrocuted.
Oh.
Because he had a, they said there was something on his collar, some kind of metal thing. And they think he'd been electrocuted and had been saved by whatever this metal thing was. Well, the metal thing was a little identification thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just clicked, and I said, check him for a microchip.
Yeah, my gosh, yeah.
And so then I emailed Emily, and I said, I don't want to get your hopes up, but can you tell me what the microchip number was for cancer?
Yeah.
And so there was a whole series of emails going back and forth between her and I and her parents and I, because her parents had all her information. And, yeah, it must have been January, because it was February.
It must have been very cold, too. My goodness.
Yeah, I had a meeting in Ottawa, and it turned out it was her cat.
Isn't that beautiful? So that was sort of intuitive too, wasn't it, on your part?
Well, yeah, partly, but I mean, she'd given me all of this information. It was months later, so anyway,
yeah.
I escorted him home.
Oh, how nice!
Yeah, and they got married down in the States somewhere, Emily and her fiancé, and her mom sent me pictures of the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the pictures was, it was getting dark, and it was up towards the house, and Kishka was sitting in the window watching, and she said, he doesn't go outside anymore.
Oh, that's funny. Now, what was that reunion like when the Kishko rejoined with his family?
I don't. Yeah, Emily wasn't there. It was actually her parents that came to meet me at the airport, and and he knew them. It was obvious, and he had been like all of his time when he wasn't with Emily, was at her parents' place. So and they ended up paying for a lot of the extra surgery that was needed. But
I figured that much, yeah.
Yeah. So it was, you know, I mean, we paid for the surgery to make him kind of get him back to health. But there was, it was like the charge had gone through this metal thing in his, and like through his neck basically, and then down into the inguinal area and the groin.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of kind of reconstructive stuff that they had to do there in order for him to be comfortable and walk properly.
Mhm. Mhm. So reuniting these animals with their loved ones must be a real must. But you did mention that there was some burnout that, you know, that took place, that you were just feeling overwhelmed by some of the sad stories that took place, huh?
Oh, well, yeah, it always, there's always, always bad stuff that happens. Like you, got a call, not a call, actually somebody dropped by the shelter one day and said, there's a box like two or three blocks down the road where the shelter was located, was in an industrial area. And he said, there's a box down there, and I'm pretty sure there's dogs in there because I can hear them.
Oh, oh.
And it was cold. I mean, it was just really, really cold. It was like minus 32 or something. And I had a Subaru Forester, and I, so I thought, oh, okay. Got one of the attendants, and drove down there, and there was a box, and there were 7 puppies in it.
Oh, how terrible.
And they had just been left there.
How wonderful that you discovered them. You know, you were able to save them.
Yeah, well, save them, yeah. And they were beautiful, beautiful pups. I don't know why anybody would do that, but...
Desperation.
Somebody else had dumped 5 puppies at the Carcross dump, which landfills in Whitehorse are either landfills like Whitehorse has, where you like everything is kind of turned under eventually, but in the outside areas they tend to burn their landfills.
Mm-hmm.
And so of 5 puppies, 4 were rescued, but 1 was burnt too badly and had died.
Oh.
Stuff like that. You know, I mean, a dog came in once with, that she had mange.
Mm-hmm.
And her puppies that she was giving birth to as we brought her into the shelter also had mange. And most of them, it was a really difficult strain of it. And we managed to save her, but none of the puppies lived. They were literally being euthanized as they were born because they were in such bad condition that
Yes. They
couldn't have lived. And that was, you know, I mean, that's hard on staff, particularly, who have to deal with that. And
of course, people who just love animals, you know. And think
well, yeah,
about
you don't work.
There's just
you don't work
about,
at a shelter if you don't love animals. So
that's right. And there's something about the death of an animal, and at least in my experience, that is just so wrenching. More so than even the death of a human in some cases. And it's just bizarre, I think, how that works.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, I've been there a time or two. I'm sure just about everybody here has.
Mm-hmm.
It's it is wrenching. It's you know, because there's I don't know. Animals are pretty silent about their pain,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, we had one cat that we got. Actually, she was very very tiny when we got her, far too young to be separated from her mother, I think, and she grew up alongside the kids. And Jim's mom, an old Scots lady, asked
mm-hmm.
us when she learned that we had this cat, and then when she learned that we were pregnant, she wanted to know what we were going to do with the cat. And Jim said, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, you can't have a cat and a kid in the same house. And he said, but she's our firstborn. You know, and she grew to a ripe old age, the poor old thing. But we were out, she was getting really bad, and it was quickly becoming time to either acknowledge that she was about to die or to take her in and have her euthanized. And we were out New Year's Eve in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just we were at a friend's place, and came back, and she had waited up, basically, for us to return home, and then she just died.
When you got home,
she waited for us. Yeah.
Yeah. I had 3 cats that grew very old, and one by one they went outside and disappeared, and they just decided to do their, I don't know, it's almost like an American Indian thing, going out into the woods to die.
Yeah. Well,
and
they
do
that.
Animals do that, yeah.
Yeah, they do that. By the time that this cat died, all our cats were inside cats because there were foxes around and we'd had a few disappearances so
mm-hmm.
of young cats. So we just kind of made them all stay inside after that. I've never had an outdoor cat since.
Oh, we've had owls pick up cats.
Oh, yeah.
They just swoop down and take them away. And they,
Oh yeah.
It's just oh my gosh, it's unbelievable.
Way better than mice.
That's true. It's easier to get them if they're not that big.
But you know what? I guess you know I'm. That kind of brings me to the point that, you know, there are people who will, you know, and even, you know, kind of Christian people
mm-hmm.
that will say, you know, animals don't have souls. And anybody that has an animal as a pet probably doesn't buy that because, you know, I mean, animals have empathetic natures, and if that's not God-given, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
But it brings me to Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar the cat lives in a Rhode Island, I'm assuming he still lives, in a Rhode Island hospital, and you can Google him. I had hoped to have my internet up so that I could kind of give you all these websites, but if you Google him, he lives in this Rhode Island hospital, and it's not a hospital, like a care home for
uh-huh.
elderly.
Yes.
And he's not a particularly personable cat. I mean, he doesn't sort of seek attention, but he always goes and visits those who are near death.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
Yeah,
there's a lot of animals like that do this, you know.
Well, and you know, and I've heard of animals who cats particularly seem to be more attuned to this stuff. But I was reading a story not too long ago about a woman who had health issues, but she said her cat kept needing a certain spot in her abdomen.
Mm.
And eventually that spot where he kept needing was starting to feel sore. She went to the doctor, and it turns out there was a tumor there.
Wow.
But she would never have paid any attention to it if her cat hadn't brought it to her attention.
Did she get it early enough?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, she did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What a miracle, huh?
Well, really, and animals are miracle workers. I got a frantic call when I was at the shelter
mm-hmm.
from the vet clinic that we did most of our business with. They had, they tested one of our dogs, and I can't remember why they tested him, but like dogs have blood types too, but they're different from what people do.
Uh huh.
But Rex was like the O type donor. This dog that we had at the shelter, and they had a
uh-huh.
cocker spaniel in there that needed a blood transfusion now, or he was going to be a goner within about, you know, a couple of hours.
Right.
So we loaded Rex up into the into my Subaru and headed over to the vet clinic, and he donated blood for this cocker spaniel.
Yes.
Which then survived whatever it was that was going to kill him, and
mm-hmm.
and so we had big thank yous from the vet clinic and the owner of the dog and so on. I mean, there's lots and lots of interesting stories like that out there.
Yeah. We have, up on the hill where we live, there's a white Pyrenees. I call him the great white Pyrenees. His name is Baxter.
They're huge, and, aren't they?
Yeah, he is such a beautiful creature. But he just loves my husband and I, and he breaks, well, for not more than anything else, he loves the river that flows by our house, but there's something about the white Pyrenees that is very independent. And his mistress just loves him dearly, but he isn't the kind of dog who sidles up to you or, you know, just lies next to you wherever you are. He kind of has his own life, basically. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, it's the life of Baxter, you might say. But anyway, a day or two before he turned 13, and now he's been 13 ever since. But he got away, and it was in November, and he went down into the river and got stuck in the mud, and his mistress was frantic because she didn't know where he was, and she knew that she just knew he was in the river. So Tom and Ulysses, my dog, went, and Ulysses was not very well at the time, but in fact, he almost died, and that's a whole wonderful story because he is so vital now, it's just wonderful. But Tom and Ulysses went up and down the river, and Ulysses, Tom looked back, and there was Ulysses straining over the bank, looking at Baxter, you know, there was Baxter stuck in the mud. And he was having a hard time getting him out. But he called me, and I just hoisted him out, like, you know, just got him out. And I had a little bit of a dose of this stuff called Miracle Mineral Supplement in my pocket because I wanted to make sure that I thought he could die of hyperthermia. So gave that to him, and his mistress came down with a fire. The fire company was coming, actually did show up to pull him out. But we pulled him out, and they took him to the vets, and the dog did very, very well. But he hasn't even wanted to go outside. But on the 4th of July, he got out. He went running down to the river again. He went flying into the river and was about to swim God knows where, and nobody would have ever been able to find him. Now, his mistress, you know, he isn't as well as he used to be. He's getting kind of shaky and weak, and she thinks that he's trying to get away to die. You know how we were just saying how the animals like mm-hmm. to crawl mm-hmm. away and die. I don't think he's that close to death by any means, but he is weaker and he is shakier, and I go up and visit him as much as I can. He's just a lovely dog. So, but it's, you know, it's heartbreaking because she knows that he's probably going to leave us soon, and in fact, I hadn't heard him bark. It was a strange experience for me because I hadn't heard him bark, and I said to Tom, oh, my God, I hope Baxter isn't gone, so... We went to visit, and he just isn't making the bark. He isn't barking as much as he used to. But oh, my gosh, if that dog would have died, which, of course, he's going to, I would have just been devastated all day long. And I was trying to prepare myself for it, but there was just no way I could.
You know, and we know, you know, when we take an animal in that they're going to live, you know, I mean, 16 is a good age.
Yeah,
you know, for a cat or a dog.
For a cat, you know, for a dog especially.
But,
my gosh, yeah.
But we still open ourselves up to that, and you know, good for us, I guess.
Yeah, well, dogs live considerably shorter lives, and Ulysses had gotten this cancer, which really almost took him down. My other dog, Macunda, had only died about 9 months before, and I just said to Ulysses, you know, you're not allowed to die, basically.
And so far he's listening?
Yeah, so far he's listening, but oh my gosh, he was bleeding to death, and you just cannot believe. There's a Chinese herb called Yunyan Baiyan that my vet, who is very much naturally oriented, and he said, he was sure that this would work. But Yunyan Baiyan is a Chinese herb that we in America knew nothing about until the Vietnam War, when most of the North Vietnamese, you know, the so-called Viet Cong, when they were killed, they found these little bottles on them. But what would happen is if they were shot, they would take the little bottles of Yunyan Baiyan and take it, and it would arrest the bleeding, so people weren't bleeding to death, and then they could get help. So that's how a lot of those people's lives were saved, and that's how we discovered this herb. So it is just, it's very easy to get. You can just get it on Amazon. In fact, I just recently got a new box of them. Just, I think it's important to have around if in case of falling and bleeding profusely before you can get to the hospital, or even to, let's say, not go to the hospital. To save yourself the bill and save, you know, everybody lots of time, to take this wonderful herb and stop the bleeding. Well, as far as Ulysses went, it stopped his bleeding enough so that he could get his energy together. And we did all, I counted about 15 different natural things that we did, so that finally, including that miracle mineral supplement, which is nothing more than the hydrogen ion that you activate with citric acid, a lemon, the juice from a lemon or a lime. And I would give that to him every 2 hours around the clock, religiously. And now I still give it to him, and he laps it right up. Because now, you know, now the thing is he could have a return of this cancer, and I'm just keeping up his regimen. But the thing is that then the tumor became so encapsulated that we knew that we could remove it without, it was just a period of, a window of time, you could tell, that we had to get rid of the tumor by a surgical means. And my vet happened to be in town, and he doesn't usually like to do these things anymore, but we begged him, and he did it. And the tumor was completely layered and encapsulated with cancer, and it was on the penis. So he had to remove the penis, and he rerouted the urinary system, and the little guy, he's not that little, he's about 70, 80 pounds, he kind of pees like a girl, and he kind of pees on himself, but He doesn't like to pee on himself, so he works very hard at not peeing on himself. But he just has so much vitality. He just runs to the river and swims with me every day. And here we are. We're at the beach right now. We just got down here. And then he will, after this, we'll go to the ocean. And he's just, last year at this time, I didn't know he had cancer, but I could tell there was something wrong with him because we took him to the beach and he didn't really want to take a walk. I would take him maybe, you know, halfway down the street, and he'd stop and look back. But now he's just running. Today he's just, I'm just thinking, I can't believe he's a miracle dog. And he's like a holy dog. He's like a holy dog. You know, you see him and you just want to touch him so that you can get some of that too.
He's not a youngster anymore, is he?
No, he's about 10. He turned 10 just after... I guess he turned 10, and a few days later, he got his surgery. So he's a youngster in some respects, but not really. I'm going to try and experiment with, you know, see how long we can get him to live. But right now, he certainly isn't in any weakened condition. Have you ever heard of Nupro? Nupro. They make it for cats, and they make it for dogs, and I believe they make it for. Ferrets. So what it is it's a nutritional supplement it's completely pure. There's Norwegian kelp in it. There's completely balanced amino acids in it. And there's all these well-rounded things, very high-quality brewer's yeast, as an example. And I give that to him. And we have never fed him dog food, and I believe that cat food and dog food is not good for animals. But by giving this nutritional supplement in the food that we do cook for him, I am so confident that we're giving him a well-rounded nutritional meal every day. So that's part of another thing that we do for him. And I really recommend that for anybody who's listening. To give that to your animal, you just cannot imagine how his coat is beautiful. It gives him a lot of vitality. His teeth are stronger. His eyes are clear. And so we're excited I've been excited about that ever since I found out about it.
Well, you know, I mean, animals are capable of really interesting things. I mean, I had two people particularly that I know of who had cats,
mm-hmm.
particularly, live up until they were over 30 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I've never had one live that long, but...
what did they do? What do you know?
Nothing particularly that I know of, other mm-hmm. than keep them inside. I mean...
Yeah,
in the Yukon, I mean, there are wild critters everywhere, so if you let a pet... be outside and available something's going to get it sooner or later, but you know, I mean, one person in particular came to adopt a cat that we had inherited somewhat from one of the care homes. There were two cats that had lived at the care home, and one developed urinary tract problems and ended up dying. But there was still one, and they were moving. They were moving all of their patients to another facility, and they didn't want to take this cat with them, the surviving cat.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up coming to the shelter, and he was quite elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who adopted him had adopted a cat from the shelter prior to that, and that cat had lived to be about 32 years old.
Oh my gosh!
And I haven't heard since what happened to this cat that he adopted when I was there, but he fully expected it to live. You know, it was in its 20s when he adopted it, and he fully expected it to live a good long life. And the person who actually started the Humane Society Yukon, she also had two or three cats that lived well into their 20s and one into their 30s. I mean, that's bizarre, you know.
Yes.
Really.
Carol says she has a, well, I think, I don't know if Snowball was a cat that recently died. I know she had a cat that recently died, but I don't know if this was Snowball or not, had lived to age 21. So that's a beautiful age.
It really is, yeah. I think an average is like 12 to 16 years.
I had a friend who had a cat that lived to 25, and I thought that was extremely aged, you know. And she did all kinds of neat things. She treated that cat homeopathically. The cat was an outdoor cat, but I don't believe some of these cats, most any cat I've ever met, are so incredibly intelligent, but they don't necessarily see an owl come swooping in. But this one was very intelligent. She knew, I would say she was a survivor, and she would stay away from that. Now, this woman who had the cats, her father was a homeopathic physician. So like I said, they treated the cat, with homeopathy. But the physician also did a very specific treatment on the lymph system to his patients. And he taught that to his daughter, and I've learned how to do it. But anyway, she did that on her cat every day. I almost attribute the cat's longevity to that treatment. But I don't know, because 30 years, I would just like to know if there's a secret to the longevity of those cats. And maybe it's just not something that was something that these people necessarily told anybody about.
Yeah, well, you know, it may be just genetics too, but
genetics, well, right,
I had something in my mind that I was going to say with regard to that. You were mentioning homeopathy, and I don't know if my friend Barb is listening or involved in this conversation. I kind of emailed her along with some others, but she has been learning Reiki, and she has on her place, she's got several horses.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs. She's got a couple of dogs, and she's got a couple of cats, and one of which was a feral cat that she kind of coaxed into into being a house cat. And Barb is one of these people that, speaking of genetics, walks into a shelter, and she's got a great big mark on her forehead that says, "Pick her, pick her." And so she ended up with... And she'd always had dogs, but she ended up with a cat. and was just totally at sea. She had no idea what to do with this cat. And she and I had worked together. She did the website for the shelter in Whitehorse. And so she and I were really good friends because of that. And so then she's immediately messaging me about what to do with this cat that she'd acquired.
And
so now she's got all that worked out, and she's got two of them. But she also had a pony that had some issues, and she had somebody treating it with Reiki. And so then she started to learn that, and she said it's really made a visible difference that she can see in not only the little pony that required the treatment, but also with a further treatment for another horse that she has. And
yes, acupuncture is very helpful also. Acupuncture, yeah.
Yeah, and so this is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a treatment that was being, somebody who was a volunteer at our shelter. She had, Eskimo dogs, I think is what they're called. They're
Eskimo Spitz?
Well, they're a breed of husky, but they're like different from huskies as I know them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're indigenous to the north, like the Northwest Territories, etc. And she was doing something, and you know, I can't remember the name, and it's just going to bug me until I figure it out. But it sounds to me like it's a form of Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like touch therapy that is just, she claims it's amazing, and I haven't really seen any of that, but with what my friend Barb was telling me, it sounds similar, and it's, worth looking into if you have an animal that's in distress.
Yes. It's always good for people to even just learn these things for themselves. So this neuromechano, this treatment that my friend gave to her 25-year-old cat all of her life, I do give to Ulysses every day too. And he lays down for it. If I don't, he'll beg for it by backing up and bumping into me, his back. He backs up so that his back is facing me, and he bumps me so that I do it. Yeah, people think, you know, would think that he's spoiled, but really he's just a lover. They're just lovers, and that's all they want is love.
Well, so. Exactly, yeah. I don't have access to a clock here, so I don't know how much time we've got, but I just wanted to relate something that
could have occurred
to
me. Go ahead.
I think maybe it was Twilight Zone. I remember seeing it years and years and years ago. And it spoke to me, and like, you know, I've been talking all night, not so much about animal rights, but about animals and spirituality. But anyway, this episode was a guy walking along with his dog, and he's got a fishing creel and rod, and walking along with his dog. It was a golden retriever, I think, or a lab.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're walking along, and it's a nice country road, and and he comes to a place where somebody says welcome. And he says, "Oh, well, thank you." You know, and conversation happens, and he learns that he and his dog are dead.
Mm-hmm.
They'd gotten caught up in a stream or something and drowned or whatever, but they were dead.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "But you're welcome here," and you know, and beautiful scene. It's got a nice gate and fence, and it's all, you know, nice sunny and clouds and a beautiful, beautiful place to be. And So he goes to go in, and as he's invited, and the guy at the gate says, "Oh, well, you can't bring your dog in here."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Oh, well, okay, then I don't want to be here." So he travels along the road a little bit further, and eventually he comes to a kind of a hinky-looking place, but the guy there at that gate says, "Of course you're welcome here, and so is your dog."
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that, you know, he's entering the gates of heaven with his dog, and that place down the road, that's the old trickster.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want animals. He has no use for animals.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, we had a discussion about whether dogs or cats or animals go to heaven on my blog one time, mainly because I met this gentleman who runs the Grotto of Lourdes, which is kind of a place very much like the Lourdes in France, about an hour and a half away from my home. And he's the director there, and he is a devout Roman Catholic, but he really embraces the saints of all religions. He's a very universal sort of man. But he was with a priest one time, and the priest said, "Well, animals don't go to heaven," kind of thing. And he had he kind of went crazy with this guy. You know, he says he confronted the priest. He told him under no uncertain terms that animals go to heaven, and it was just very touching to hear him talk about that. It was just very sweet.
Well, think about the number of churches. I certainly the Anglican Cathedral in Whitehorse, and I assume churches elsewhere, do their annual St. Francis of Assisi blessing of the animals.
That's right. Every October.
Yeah. So, like,
really?
Why did they do that? They can't possibly believe that they're doing that and that there are no souls there. Like, you don't bless people, you bless souls, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's so true that St. Francis was one of the most incredible saints in the Roman Catholic Church, or let's say the most incredible saint anywhere of any religion. And to say that dogs or animals don't go to heaven is just sort of going against what St. Francis did for, and also any saintly person. It's pretty amazing.
Well, and against what you and I and anybody who's listening knows from our personal interactions with animals, because, you know, how could you possibly experience some of the stuff you do? And it, like, to me, it just, I just don't believe that any creature who has empathy, whether for another animal or for a human,
mm-hmm.
doesn't have a soul. You know, that's just me, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I absolutely agree. I have no doubts that animals probably would go to heaven faster than I ever would, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Suffer the children kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would go wherever my dog goes, that's all. And they're all going to be greeting us when we die, and it's going to be a remarkable experience to be reunited with these animals. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and, you know, when I think of them all, I mean, I did right back to, gosh, I had a dog that, he was kind of a useless old thing. He was a sled dog, but he was not much good as a sled dog. He was pretty lazy. But
sounds like my kind of guy.
I was just a toddler, and I was living in Whitehorse, and I don't know if you've ever kind of investigated any of the topography there, but where I lived was up alongside the air base. And it had been, like all of that, had been built during World War II the U.S. Army when they were worried about Russian and or Japanese incursion over that route. And so I lived on top of this clay cliff, basically, that, that you know, you drop over it, and it's just like a almost a sheer drop down into the town of Whitehorse proper at that time. And I was just tiny. And my dad told me this story. I don't remember it, but my dad told me that I had gone missing.
Oh.
And they had the whole neighborhood out looking for me. And it was my a friend's brother who actually found me. And the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently the dog had basically grabbed onto the back of my overalls to keep me from tumbling over the edge of this cliff.
Oh, my God.
But because of me and how he was situated, he couldn't move. And obviously he couldn't bark because he had me in his jaws.
Oh, that dear soul.
People
so
are calling and calling and calling.
He wasn't as lazy as everybody thought.
And well, no, he guess he kind of trailed me around,
and
Eugene that found us, and
that he saved your life. Know, my God, wonder how many stories
been,
are like that, you know, of these animals
yeah,
saving our lives.
Maybe two or three, because I was about a year and a half, I think, when we moved into Whitehorse, And so, you know, lazy as he was, Dad said that he'd earned his groceries for the rest of his life.
Oh, I love it. I love that. Well, we've reached the end of our hour.
Holy cow.
Wasn't that wonderful? I really, really enjoyed it.
Good.
It was very relaxing. Very relaxing and enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm not sure about animal rights so much, but it was a good chat.
You got to love our animals. And there's two movies. Have you seen The Planet of the Apes? The Rising. It's a new one. And it's called The Rising of the Planet of the Apes. Oh, my God.
No,
they take over. They take over the world. And then there's another one called Water for Elephants. You've probably read the book. I never did read it.
I've heard about it, and I really want to see the movie, but I haven't.
The movie, it's another animal rights kind of theme, and these two movies are kind of taking the summer by storm, so I recommend both of them, really.
Well, good.
Yeah.
And if they're taking the summer by storm, then that's a good thing.
Yeah. Barb, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. It's been fun, and I love animals, as you know. And we can get together and think of. I wanted to know more about what you're doing, but maybe we can bring you back and talk about those things.
Sure.
I loved hearing your voice. It was fun, and I can. Well, we'll get together again. So. Let's see. I'm going to be playing Music for Mother and Child by Klaus D. Jensen. And
cool.
I love his music. So here we go. And have a wonderful evening. Thank you again.
Great.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.